Save big on your landscaping project now at Menards. Whether you're installing a patio or a new retaining wall, Menards has the blocks you need to get the job done right. We carry the largest in-stock selection ready to take home today. Stop in and get our 12-inch smooth patio block on sale now. Save big on concrete landscape blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Today on The Grave Talks, leaving the house on Pulteney Road. Another interview with Stephanie Bonte. Stephanie Bonte's family had a long history of conjuring spirits at the house on Pulteney Road. But what happened to the spirits and her family after they left the property? Were the spirits more attached to the property or the souls of her family? Before Stephanie was born, the man who did the conjuring of the spirits, her grandfather, passed away. At least that incarnation of his soul passed this earth. Did he make a surprising return to the world along with the spirits he conjured in a former life? Today, we hear about the life of Stephanie Bonte and her family after the house on Pulteney Road.
The reason why I wrote my second book, It Found Me, is because it's very hard when you write a book that's based on fact, because with the paranormal and anything supernatural, you can't make up an ending. You can't make a happy ending. You can't say, and they lived happily ever after, because it doesn't work like that, as you probably know. So many people got in touch with me and said, well, what happened next? So that's why I wrote the second book. The second book is predominantly about me and my immediate family, as opposed to being my grandparents, because obviously my granddad died. And soon after he died, I was born. Sort of around 10 months later, I was born early, and I was born on his actual birthday. My mum knew the whole way through her pregnancy that I would be early and I'd be born on his birthday. She always says it's because of this promise that he made, that if he died, then he would prove to her there was life after death. And he used to joke, I'll come back as one of your animals, because my mum always looked after her animals so well. And then she fell pregnant with me. There's 10 years between me and my brother, completely unexpectedly. And she just knew. She's always thought I am his way of saying, here you go, I've come back, but as your child. So that's kind of what my mum's always thought. And she sounds mad, but as I've grown up, not so much now, but when I was younger, just so many things happened that linked me to him. I think that's why I've had such an interest in him and his life and the paranormal, because much of his life was devoted to that.
Sure. Now, having that link, having, you know, the interesting coincidences, having the drive, some of the same, you know, interests, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you, do you that's what you said, that's what your mom believes, is that you were born on that day.
That's what my mom believes.
What about you? Well, I want to ask that question to you. What do you believe the connection is there, other than obviously him being your grandfather? Do you feel that there are other connections there that you have no control over?
Okay, so I'll tell you a couple of things that happened shortly after I was born. Mm-hmm. So my mum and dad got me christened, and at the christening, my dad took some photos. And at my sister's christening, which was 13 years prior to when I was christened, my granddad took the photographs, because he was a photographer. He developed all of his own photos. And basically, when he took photos at my sister's christening, they were... I can't think of the word, which is annoying, but you know, when the negatives were exposed to light. So basically the photos didn't come out, and a lot of the photos my parents never saw. Mm-hmm. So my dad took some photos when I was christened, and he took them along to, there's a shop in England called Boots that get photos developed. And he took them in and he said, I'd like to get these photos developed, please. And they said, yes, gave him a ticket, come back next week. So he went back and he handed his ticket over and they said, one moment, we'll go and get your photos for you. And when they come back, they had two lots of photos and they said, my dad said, oh, no, I only bought in one lot to be developed. And they said, no, they said, we don't actually know where this other set have come from. And they're in a brown, envelope. So my dad took them. And long story short, they were the photos that were never seen at my Christmas sister's christening. They have no idea. The shop didn't know where they'd come from. Obviously, my parents didn't know. My mum was just like, she couldn't believe it. No one could believe it. And there's just, yeah, to this day, we have no idea how the shop ended up with these photos. I mean, some people say, oh, perhaps, you know, Dick took them there before he died. Maybe he tried to get them developed, but we have no idea. I very, very much doubt it. He lived in Woodford. My parents lived in a place called Sorbageworth, which is around an hour away. It just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And like I say, he didn't get them developed when he was alive. He couldn't. So, yeah, we just didn't know. We didn't know where the photos had come from. So that was one thing. As well, when I was probably 4 years old, my parents bought me a keyboard and I used to take it everywhere with me because I loved music. And then one day on the way home from, I don't know where we'd been, I was with my sister and my mum. I started playing a tune on the keyboard and all of a sudden they recognised it. And my mum was like, Jane, do you recognize what Steph's playing? And basically my granddad was a musician. He used to write his own music. And I was playing one very slowly, but I was playing one of my granddad's songs. And when asked, you know, where did you hear that? I just said, oh, I don't know. And I used to sing loads of old songs from like wartime, things like that, very, very strange things. And then when I was around, it was just before my second birthday, my mum's mum was sadly hit by a car and she was killed. And I went over to the cemetery to visit her grave, which I've done forever. And I went with my mum and my granddad. And I was stood at the grave and I was at the time probably about 2.5, maybe three and a half. And I said to my mum, mum, I want to play with the children. And I was pointing over kind of the back of the cemetery. So my mum said, I just ran off. And my mum said, she looked at me and she said to her dad, can you go and check on her? And they were kind of laying flowers at the grave. And my granddad had Parkinson's disease, so he was very slow anyway, but he started walking after me. And the lady who was tending the grave next to my mum, she stood next to my mum and she said, sorry, I'm gonna have to say. She said, but look at your little girl. And my mum said, she looked up and I had my arms out playing Ring a Ring of Roses. And she said, where your daughter is now, that's the child's cemetery. And she said, my mum said she just dropped everything and ran after her dad. And yeah, and when I got there, apparently I got really upset and said, you've scared all the children away. So there was things when I was little, I mean, that loads and loads of stuff that happened when I was kind of around that age that made my mum think, yeah, something's not special. I'm far from special, but my mum knew that something, again, wasn't right, but you know what I mean. Something was there. So that's kind of why she always thought that there was some connection between me and my granddad.
Do you have any recollection of these incidents of playing with kids that no one else is seeing or anything like that when you look back on your childhood?
I don't remember that. Probably the first thing that I remember happening to me. So my mum and dad bought a house in Sorbageworth. It's down this little cul-de-sac. And when she bought the house, the people who lived in it before her lived there, I think, for around 14 years. And when they moved out, they told my mum, they said, we're not telling you to frighten you or anything like this. And the sale had already gone through. They said, but basically we had a new fireplace fitted. And in the fireplace, we found a gravestone. And it's a gravestone of a little girl. And they said, we're taking it with us. So my parents were kind of like, that's, you know, all to their own kind of thing. So the first thing I remember was probably when I was around six or seven, and I used to hear people calling my name. Bearing in mind, I knew nothing about the gravestone. Obviously, my parents wouldn't tell me that. But I used to hear a little girl calling name repeatedly. I used to tell my mum, and she would, at the time I just thought she'd ignored me and was thinking I was crazy. And then one time I got up, because it was in the middle of the night, I got up and I opened my door, because my bedroom was at the end of a hallway, quite a long hallway, and one of the spare rooms was at the end of the hallway, and I opened my door and there was a little girl, and she was dressed in kind of like a white and blue outfit. She looked very, like, at the time I just thought she had like a puffy dress on, how I would have described it, with an apron. And anyway, I ran back to bed. I was, you know, quite scared. Got back into bed, probably hid under the covers, and things like that continued. I heard scratching on my window. I used to hear people running around in the house. And anyway, then I found out about this grave probably when I was more like 10 years old, my mum told me, because I was maybe sort of, again, around eight. And I was younger than that. I was younger than that. This was probably, again, when I was around four, because I don't remember this. But my mum and sister, again, were looking after me. And I went out in the garden and I started digging the garden up. And my sister come out and said to me, Stephanie, what are you doing? And I said, I'm trying to help the little girl. She's stuck under the ground. And I dug up the garden. But I don't remember that. But obviously my mum kept picking up on me saying, I can see a little girl, I can hear a little girl. And yeah, just more and more stuff happened to me. The older I got.
Wow. Now, when they make me understand the grave situation, they took the grave, the stone, the marker?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, they took. So, yeah, so you know, like when you go to a cemetery and you've got the headstone kind of thing. Yeah. They felt that it brought them luck. And they said, we've been so happy in this house. We feel like we've had so much luck in this house. We're taking it with us. And at the time, my parents didn't really think anything of it. They didn't argue. Yeah. You know, they just thought, you know, if that's what you've got to do. But when I got older and I found this out, I did research, the local library, and I found out my mum already had, she'd been told by people who'd lived in the village for a long time, that where my parents live, Greenstead, is actually built on a old pig farm. And there was a massive, massive fire there years and years ago, and loads of animals and children died. So we don't know, but from what I remember seeing, and I mean, I've seen and heard stuff in the house for years and years. We think that perhaps the little girl is the spirit of one of the children who was killed in the fire.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now, I know we're going to kind of jump here with this question, and we'll go back in time. But as you got older, and as you realized, you know, they have this grave marker that they took from another location for luck, essentially. Was the conversation, it's not like you got the, you know, the rabbit's foot keychain at the county fair. It's like, let's take the grave marker.
No, exactly. Well, they just kept it in their attic. They just kept it in the attic, because we've seen them since. But we think maybe it disturbed something. I mean, you can't go and take something. She's resting there. Yeah. We don't know whether she was buried under if they've taken the headstone away and replaced the fireplace. If she was buried directly under that, then, you know, you could be disturbing all sorts of things.
Sure. So when they moved or kept the grave marker, I just want to understand, this was from a previous house, and then they moved and took the stone with them to a new location, correct?
Yeah. Okay. So my parents bought a house.
Okay.
In Sawbridgeworth, and the people who lived in the house that my parents bought took the gravestone from the house that my parents they're still there, still live in.
Okay.
They took it with them.
Okay. Was there ever any conversation later of, let's get this grave marker back to where it originally was?
Do you know? No. I don't really know why either. Mm-hmm. We've seen the people, I've been with my mum probably when I was a teenager. Seen them, and it's not really been bought up, but yeah, perhaps that's what was needed. But since I've moved out of the house, nothing's happened. My parents haven't experienced anything. And I mean, things used to go missing. We used to We found it was around Christmas time. We would put things down like keys, and then we turned back. Literally minutes later, the keys would be gone. And in the end, we were having to say, "Can you put the keys back? Can you please?" And normally, they would just return to where we left them, but things like that happened all the time to me, my parents, to my brother, my sister. And when I moved out, everything like that stopped. So my mum just put it down to maybe she's, you know, maybe it was me kind of that she was, I don't know, maybe yeah. Because she was a little girl and I was a little girl living in the house, perhaps she felt a connection with me and that's why she was more active.
Is that what you believe? Do you think you were the catalyst that brought this activity out of the house or out of the area where this little girl may have been because of the relatability or just because maybe, you know, you are maybe more sensitive than others and they can see you and sense you and they know that you can communicate with them more than others?
Well, I think when I was younger, particularly, I think I was definitely very sensitive. It wasn't just her that I saw in the house. I remember one time really distinctly, I must have been around 11, and I was on the phone to my friend and I was in the dining room kind of at the front of the house. And I had a nephew. I've got a nephew who's 10 years younger than me or so. And he was about two. He was in the lounge with my family. And I was on the phone to my friend and Jake, my nephew, suddenly started screaming, really screaming. I mean, I've always been really close to him, but he was screaming and he come crawling out of, running out of the front room into where I was sitting in the dining room. And we had a dog as well. And she come running in with me and I was like, this is strange. And everyone just carried on talking in the lounge. And as I looked round, like I pulled Jake in, like was pulling him close to me. And in the corner of my eye, I saw something move at the door and I turned round and there was a woman. And the only way I can describe what she looked like, she was very tall. I couldn't see her face to begin with. She was facing forward. She had her hair tied up in a bun and she was almost gliding. Like you could see feet, but they weren't really moving past the door. And as she went past the door, she just very quickly turned her head to look at me. And honestly, it still gives me goosebumps thinking back to it. It was one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen. And then I saw her, I had goosebumps all up my neck, all over my arms. And she kind of, she weren't walking, but she was. It was very, really strange, to the bottom of the stairs, which I could see from the dining room. And the whole time she moved, she kept her eyes on me. And then when she got to the bottom of the stairs, she just very quickly looked upstairs and just was gone. It was honestly horrible. But I've seen her there. And then the last time I possibly saw anything in that house was I must have been about 20. And I remembered I was laying in bed. And I was dozing in and out of sleep. I think I had the television on, all the lights off. So there was a very like gentle light in the room. And all of a sudden I woke up really quickly. You know, when you're probably falling asleep, you know, and you drift off and then all of a sudden something wakes you up. And I looked at the bottom of the bed and it was the creepiest thing. It was just awful. It was like this. It sounds stupid when I describe it. But if you imagine a leprechaun, so like quite a little kind of person, they weren't dressed as a leprechaun, but that kind of structure, kind mm-hmm. of that size, but it looked like he was running really fast and he had this awful sharp face and he was just running and running, but he weren't moving anywhere. And I couldn't scream. Like when I get frightened, if I try and scream, nothing really comes out. And I was trying to grab my breath, and I was kind of digging my hat because I explain in a minute, but I've got this thing where I put my thumb between my fingers and I squeeze really hard, and I was doing that to make sure I was awake, and I was digging my nails in my hand, and I managed to scream, and my dad come running into the room, and as soon as he opened the door, whatever it was disappeared. But yeah, that was the last time I saw anything in that house. I was around 20 because I was back from university. So I definitely was very sensitive growing up, but I never, apart from, I've done a Ouija board when I was 14, I contacted something very, very bad. But besides that, I didn't really go looking for it.
Yeah. As far as and we'll talk about the Ouija board and some of these other things in just a moment, but onto that last thing you had mentioned about these spirits, the woman and the the short figure. You're not alone. I'll say that. I know you say it sounds silly and crazy to talk about it, and I get it. You know, we just saying this in at the local McDonald's to someone, you're going to get some strange looks. But the thing is, we've gotten stories like that. We of people feeling that exact same way, saying this is going to sound crazy, but it was like a leprechaun, or it was like the Munchkins from The Wizard of Oz, but it was, you know, kind of menacing feeling.
Yeah.
And it's like, and people saying, I don't believe in, you know, mythical beings and things like this, but this is what it seemed to present itself as. So I just want to tell you, you are certainly not alone in hearing or getting something like that, or anyone saying, expressing that they've seen something of that nature. But what do you think, and this is just an opinion-based question, what do you think these other entities were in the house? Do you have any idea on the identification of who they may be?
Absolutely no idea.
No.
None. No idea. Haven't got a clue. No.
No. Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, obviously you wouldn't know, but I didn't know if you had any inclination or any sort of research on the house that would say, oh, well, you know, this woman had passed here or something of that nature. Or continue on. You said you used a Ouija board when you were around 13 or so.
Yes.
Tell me about that encounter and what happened.
Okay, let's give it a go. You cut out a little bit there, so I reckon you might lose me again, but let's give it a go.
Okay.
So I rounded up a few girls. There was maybe five or six of us. We went over to the school field and we did a seance, and I got a small white feather and I put it in the mud, put some mud on the top of it in the middle of the circle. And maybe for 10 minutes we sat there. Is anybody there? The girls were getting very frustrated and I kept on, no, we have to keep on. Anyway, we all saw this feather rise out of the mud, not by far, maybe an inch or so, and one of the girls broke the circle, and I'd said to them specifically, do not break the chain, do not break the circle. Anyway, she broke the circle. That night she got hit by a car. She was okay, she had some broken bones, but I think we all straight away knew we contacted something that day. We then went on to do more Ouija boards, more seances, more stuff happened. It got quite out of hand. We went over to, there's like a big park, a big kind of open park in Bishop Stortford, and we went over there and we did another Ouija board. And when we were about halfway through the Ouija board, we had the planchette that was moving. A woman come over and she said, excuse me, and we kind of threw everything a bag, and she said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to say something. She said, I know you've contacted something. So we kind of all kind of looked at her. We were around like 14 years old, so we didn't want to get caught. She said, you've got to stop now. You've got to stop. It's not good. Anyway, we didn't stop. We carried on. It got quite out of hand, and my mum had to take me to see a priest. And he done some blessings on me. He told me to leave everything alone. And I'm talking now, maybe 3 years after it happened. He said, never talk about it again. He said, never talk about what you contacted. He said, always wear a cross and sleep with a Bible under your bed. So my mum went out. She bought me a cross. That night I was vomiting. We didn't associate anything at that point. The next day I come out in a rash from my head down all across my chest. And it wasn't until I took the cross off that I started getting better. And then I had the Bible under my bed. I couldn't sleep at night. I got fidgety. I was uncomfortable. And I took the Bible away. I slept fine. And then maybe a week or two later, I started not sleeping again, and I just knew my mum put the Bible under my bed. I found it, and she constantly would do this, kept trying to put the Bible back under my bed, but I knew every time she'd done it, because I just couldn't sleep. And then when I moved out from home, my mum bought me another cross, and that night I started vomiting. I got the rash on my chest. Twice since I've been with my husband now, I've attempted to wear a cross, and each time I get the vomiting, and the rash. Now, I don't, the house which my husband and I live in now, it's 120 years old. We found out since we've been here, we had no idea. I basically, I saw a man in our house, and we contacted the people who lived here before. We found out that it's haunted by a boy who died here when he was around 18 years old. The house is 120 years old, so the history must be wild in this place. But I haven't really, I don't go looking for anything now. I would never do a Ouija board again. I would never do a seance. And I would say to anybody, just don't touch the things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do go on ghost hunts. I do enjoy that. And I do love hearing about the paranormal. I have a real keen interest in it. But the amount of times my husband and I, or, you know, a friend or my mum comes places with me and they get a Ouija board out, and I just say, no chance, I'm not getting involved in it. And I won't touch a Ouija board or a seance. My granddad, before he died, made the family make a promise. And I know firsthand why he made us make that promise, and I didn't take it seriously until I played around with it myself. And yeah, they're dangerous things, they really are. Yeah.
Between the time of playing with that Ouija board and, mm-hmm. and that woman coming up to you saying you guys brought something up, there's something that came through,
yeah,
and then the moment a couple years later where your mom said we have to go see a priest, mm-hmm. and something needs to be done. Can you tell us about any of the events that led up to your mom saying, we got to do something about this?
Yeah, okay. So basically, the school I was at where I did the seance initially, I ended up getting extremely bullied there, and I had to leave. And I moved to a different school, miles and miles away. I made a new group of friends. And then basically I was I can't go into too much detail, but I was possessed at times. I had no real remembrance of what happened. Mm-hmm. But friends who I had, and I'm talking, for example, one of my best friends at the time, he was 6'2", didn't believe in ghosts, never had any experience with it, and was with me when something happened to me that I can't even remember. And then he came around my house one time with maybe two other boys and a few girls, and I had a sleepover. I had a lot of friends when I was growing up, and my mum always encouraged sleepovers and parties and things. So we had this big sleepover, and basically who I contacted, I found a grave that belonged to who I contacted. Mm-hmm. And it was in the cemetery close to where I live, and I took my friends up there at around midnight, and I showed them the grave, and I said, this is what's been happening to me, and blah blah blah. Anyway, I went home, and the next day my parents told me, so probably in the afternoon, my dad had been out and he come back, and he said there's been a fire at the church, and basically the altar, that it was all on up, all locked from the inside, but the altar in the church had caught fire. They have no idea how it happened. There was no broken entry into the church, but just the altar area inside the church had caught light. And it was at that point my mum said to me, Steph, did anything happen last night? And I told her what happened before we went to the church, and we didn't go near the church, we were at the cemetery. I said I showed my friends the grave. Anyway, my mum said to me, take me to the grave. So I said, okay. And I went to where the grave was, and the grave was gone. And she said to me, I don't believe you. I don't believe his grave was here. And I said, mum, I promise you, I came here last night. I've been coming here for weeks and weeks visiting. And we went and got two of my friends, and she said, take me to where Steph took you last night. And they took her up there, and the grave was gone. So whether or not the grave never existed, but we all saw it. There was six or seven of us.
Yeah.
We all saw the grave, and it was gone. So that was one. And that's when my mum said to me, and she sat down with Alec. Sorry, I probably shouldn't have said his name, but basically he's the boy, the friend of mine who saw stuff that happened to me. I'm shaking now talking about it. I've not gone into this detail, so I don't want to talk too much, but he basically broke down in tears and started crying. Now he's 6'2", he's a big guy. And he cried and he said, I've never seen Steph like that, and I can't be around her if something like that's going to happen again, because it frightened me. So that's when literally the next day my mum took me to see a priest, and he said to me, you need to wipe it out of your life entirely. We told him what happened with the church, with the gravestone, and he said, you need to just completely try and forget that it's ever happened, and don't go near a Ouija board again.
So that's
why I went. I was just going to say, I think I've almost blacked a lot of it out myself. I mean, because from when it happened when I was 14 years old until the moment that I was talking about then with you, I must have been almost 18. It was the summer before I turned 18. So I'm talking it was going on for over 3.5 years. Yeah. But I only remember snippets of it. I obviously remember what happened at the end. Mm-hmm. I remember what happened at the beginning. And I remember some of the phone calls I had and some of the stuff that happened in between. But it's like almost dark patches in my mind that I've chosen to forget about.
Yeah. When these things happen, and obviously if there's no recollection of it, it's gonna, you can't recollect it. But from what you are aware of, and you found this grave, was when we hear the word possession, people conjure up this idea that a demon got into an individual. But I know sometimes it can be essentially the spirit of a formerly living person, not a demon.
It weren't a demon. Yeah. Definitely not.
So do you feel that this was the individual that had passed away? It was this individual's spirit who had come to you and essentially was using your body as a vessel to communicate?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Do you believe that there may be something still attached to you that's not necessarily coming out on any sort of regular basis or at all, but the fact that you have these reactions to this day when you try and wear a cross necklace or things of that nature?
I would like to think no, but I still can't wear it. I have no justification to why I can't or why it makes me ill. So all I can think is, I didn't inadvertently try and get rid of what we had connected with. Just literally dropped all ties. I'm no longer friends with the people who, because I left the school. I was badly bullied. Nothing to do with that. But I left the school. And made new friends, and I was just able to cut off everything, basically. I'm still friends with Alec. I'm still friends with the other guys who got involved later on in my life. But I think I was just very lucky. I always looked at it with the fire and the grave going. I always looked at it as that was kind of the end. I don't know if it's because, when we went to the cemetery the night that it happened, I know that we did a seance and we were asking it to leave. We were asking it to leave over and over and over again. And then obviously that happened. None of us could believe it. I mean, it was probably possibly nothing to do with us being there, us doing the seance, that there was this fire at the same time. But then there is, in my mind, the thought that it was connected, and it was almost like, because it wasn't good what I connected with. And so we just took that as it was. I mean, it was just amazing when it did happen. It was unbelievable. The whole of that, what happened to me, was unbelievable. Looking back on it now. I don't know. I think that I do have some kind of attachment. I've seen things recently in the house that I'm in now. We hear things. My husband was a complete skeptic, not even a skeptic. He was a non-believer. Mm-hmm. And he used to laugh at me, and I tell him the stories. I told him the stories of the house on Pulteney Road. It was the reason why I wrote the book. I remember we went to the Maldives, and I sat there for probably 2 hours just telling him the stories. And he said, as a joke, why don't you write a book? And I was like, okay, yeah, I will. And that's why I come home and I wrote the book. And then it wasn't until we moved to the house that we're in now that he started hearing and seeing things. I don't know whether it's because obviously I am slightly spiritual, perhaps. I don't think it's that in this house. I think this house has definitely got its own little, I don't know, life going on besides the living.
Sure.
um, yeah, he would definitely believes now. I don't think he'd like to admit it, but he does.
Did you like it better before he believed, or when he where he now does believe? Because I could see that being a kind of a relief for having these things follow you all the time, and then kind of being always surrounded, having someone to kind of almost help you dismiss some things, to kind of help push your mind away from time to time. I can understand that dynamic.
To be honest, though, I am a skeptic.
Yeah.
So I believe, but I have to, I need to see. So if I go on a ghost hunt, and I used to go on loads before I had children, I went thinking this place is, nothing's going to happen. And when people are saying, oh, did you hear that? It annoys me. But then a couple of times we went to the bunker. There's an old bunker in Essex, in Brentwood, and we went there. And probably actually that was the first time my husband was like, wow, okay, yeah, something's going on. We went down in the cellars and we were stood in a circle, and basically everybody heard it. I had these headphones on and I heard it first, but these, like, they sounded like massive boots just walking around a circle where we were all stood. And my husband felt someone shake his shoulder, and he screamed. It was just so funny because he went there going, oh, this is going to be rubbish. And he was the one screaming. So the best bit for me was seeing him suddenly believe, because from someone being such, I mean, his parents don't believe, you know, they go to church, you know, you live and you die and that's it.
Yeah.
Which was pretty much how my mum felt before she met my dad. I think you have to witness it yourself. You have to, because otherwise it's just a load of nonsense, isn't it? Really, people going on and saying this, that, and the other, and you think, well, I've never seen or heard anything, so how can it be true? So I think you do. Seeing is believing, definitely.
Sure. Let's go back to something you had mentioned earlier in the conversation about your grandfather, and how when you were very young, you seemed to have knowledge of songs and things from his era, things that you would not have just picked up upon from watching television or anything of that sort. Do you believe, and this also goes back to what your grandfather had said to your mom of, you know, I'm going to come back in some way to prove to you. Do you feel that knowledge that you had, that in some way it was him there kind of teaching you these things as a child, or giving you this information and that's how you had it? Or we could go to the whole other extreme of, do you believe that you may be part of your grandfather reincarnated in some way, shape, or form?
I think definitely the latter, as crazy as it sounds. Okay. I mean, I know for a fact I would remember if I'd seen a man, or I would have said to my mum, a man told me to do it, or, you know, this, that, and the other. I was a very confident little girl, so I wouldn't have kept my mouth shut about nothing. I think what's strange is my granddad always used to say, I'll come back and haunt you. He always said it. It was a joke he had, but he never did come back and haunt anyone. The only time he ever come back was before my mum found out she was pregnant with me. Literally days after my granddad had died, my nan heard people talking upstairs. This was going back to the house on Pulteney Road. She heard people talking upstairs. She went upstairs and the voices were coming from the front room where my granddad always did the Ouija boards, and she could hear my granddad in there talking as if he was hosting a seance. And she went in the room and she collapsed in floods of tears. And yeah, it could have been grief, it could have been anything that made her hear that, but she believes that she heard him. Now, besides that, and that was before my mum found out she was pregnant with me, we never ever, no one was haunted or visited by my granddad. And the only thing I can think is that's because he came back through me. I mean, I'm sitting here now thinking, oh, can I think into my granddad's thoughts or something to get a bit more clarity on it? But no, I can't. But that is what I believe. Whether it is that or not, I don't know. But he had so much energy, so much passion, that I just feel if he could come back, which I believe people can do, he would have done. So yeah, that's what I believe, that's what my mum believes, and probably many of my family who were involved in the house on Pulteney Road.
As an adult, have you had any moments where you feel that, or not even as an adult, but just as, you know, as a more of a conscious individual beyond those early childhood years, have you had any moments where you look at getting knowledge sometimes, other than the possession type experiences, where you feel like this bit of knowledge that I have about something, even something mundane and maybe not very important, but suddenly you just have this information. Have you ever had that where you felt like, well, this would be something my grandfather would have known, but I have no way I would know this, where it's just kind of there. It's just kind of this little piece of memory information that you're conjuring up, but you don't know why you have this piece of information.
No, I wouldn't say. I wish I did, but besides possibly a really good understanding and interest in history and world wars, and getting an A star in history, No, I picked up a lot. I honestly just had this fascination with the war, the First World War. My granddad was in the war, so I don't know. Possibly that's kind of it. And I'm probably grasping at straws there, but no, nothing. Okay. I wish I could say yes, but no.
Sure. I mean, it's just an interesting thing to ask. This is another very much opinion-based question, but I'm wondering about this. If it is, in fact, the case that you are essentially, you know, the spirit of your grandfather is in you, or you are the reincarnated version of your grandfather, and this is how he's come back. You are him. He is you. Mm-hmm. If a living person in their past life does what your grandfather did, essentially conjures up a lot of spirits, a lot of ghosts, whatever you want to call it, and then ends up having attachments because of all of that follow him around through his living years, can those attachments then follow that person if they come back to this world as another individual, as like what you say you believe could be your case? That it's an interesting thing to discuss. I've never asked that question. I don't think I've ever thought of that question. Yeah. But that would kind of explain the extreme amount of haunting experiences and interactions that you've had. That maybe some of this all originates back to the things he was meddling with that still are in fact following him around today, and now you around today.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Never, ever thought of that. I've never thought of it like that. But yeah, I suppose that could be possible, couldn't it? I think spirits definitely can attach themselves. And I almost know that because of the spirit that followed my uncle Rich, the woman with the long hair, who leant over his bed, who leant over his cot, when he had his little girl Claire. His wife saw the same woman leaning over her, and she has seen her since. And so I definitely think that. I think that spirits can have an attachment to people, rather than haunting a house. I think they definitely cotton on to people. And yeah, perhaps that's why there's people and things that I've seen that I don't know who they are. I don't know, you know, what they are.
Let me ask you this, and this is another opinion-based question, because it's a really interesting perspective that you have on all this. How common do you think it is that spirits or souls are reincarnated in a familial line, essentially, where a grandfather or grandmother dies prior to the birth of a grandchild down the line, and then they come back in that form, where the lines of the souls really stay quite linear? It's not just randomly kind of going out there to this family and that family, but in fact, it's almost you're back in queue as the line goes forward, which would be interesting because in some ways it explains sometimes where children, you have so many traits of the grandfather that you never met, or the grandmother or whatever, where it's like, you're so much like that person. Well, if you look at it from that perspective, that's an interesting observation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually quite a big believer in reincarnation. Mm-hmm. I think it definitely can happen. For an example, going probably slightly off track, we lost our cat, our family pet, in October. It was devastating. Honestly, it was the worst thing that's ever happened to me. He died very suddenly. He he had saddle thrombus, so he woke me up one night paralyzed from the waist down, and died shortly after. Honestly, it was awful. Anyway, I strongly believe that an animal, and this is not talking about humans, but I believe that they can come back. And I started by chance speaking to a breeder of the same breed of British Shorthair. And I've really felt this strong connection with her, and I don't know why. And she is moving back to Thailand. So she's a Thai lady, and she breeds these beautiful cats. And I said to her, are you breeding any more before you go to Thailand? And she said, possibly once. Yeah, possibly once. She said, I'll stay in contact with you. And anyway, 2 weeks ago she contacted me, and she said, I put my cats together, and she'd already sent me the pictures of the parent cats, and she said, I've put them together, and I'm coming back from Thailand. She's gone on holiday, and she comes back in February, and she said to me, I'll let you know if she's pregnant. And I just have this feeling, I mean, I know it's probably hope, because obviously we lost Gizmo in such a traumatic way, but I just hope that the cat is pregnant, because I just have this feeling that it could. It sounds ridiculous coming out of my mouth, but I just have this feeling that it could be Gizmo coming back, because mm-hmm. I had no intention of getting another cat. If her cats aren't pregnant, then I wouldn't get another cat. It's too soon. But I just, something just led me to this woman, and I just have this feeling that she is going to be pregnant, and then I get my Gizmo back.
Yeah.
And so I just totally believe that if there's so much love or so much passion or something like that, then somebody can come back and come back to the same surroundings and the same family. Totally. Because I always said the same with Gizmo. He loved this house so much that he would come back. He would haunt it. And me and my husband, we used to call him every night. I held his fur, and I mean, I haven't done Ouija's or callings or anything. And I used to sit there with his fur in my hand and just beg for him to come back. And he never did. We heard his cat flap a couple of times, but I knew he weren't back. And now I think, is it because he's going to come back in a different way? Yeah, I do believe that totally.
That wraps up our interview with Stephanie Boddy about leaving the house on Pulteney Road. Thank you for supporting our program and keeping us on the air. We could not do this program without your support. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I am Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.